Wouldn't it be great if we lived in a world where we mentioned something once to a decision maker and they immediately got it, loved it, and bought instantly? Well, the major newsflash is that we obviously don't live in that world. And that's why we need to use repetition to help move the deal forward. Today, we're going to go there. My name is Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and I'm the author of the YourSalesPlaybook.com blog and your host for the Sales Playbook Podcast. I've personally trained over 20,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. So we're now living in a world where even if your prospect were fully on board with what you're saying, and they were paying complete attention to you, and they weren't distracted by all the other things going on, it's still way too easy for them to lose focus. How? Well, think about all the noise and interruptions that occur right after that meeting or that phone call that you have with them. From the moment they hang up with you or shake your hand and show you to the door, they have a ton of calls. Think about all the calls that they get just inside of a 24-hour period. How about all the voicemails that they're getting and leaving? All the calls that they're making, by the way, not just receiving. All the emails that they're getting. I want you to think about how, and if you've been listening to me for a while, you know this is one of my pet statistics, or pet studies, if you will. The average person is interrupted 7 times an hour, a minimum of 56 times a day. And we know that because that's what Wendy Cole from Time Magazine tells us. Think about all the internal and external meetings, all the internal, external clients that they're dealing with. Think about how much information the average person, let alone a high-level decision maker, is consuming on a daily basis. A few weeks ago, I was talking about how the average person consumes 100,000 words per day. That's 34 gigabytes, a novel and a half, and the equivalent of reading War and Peace every, probably 5 days or something like that. And that's based on a study from the University of Southern California at San Diego. I want you to also think about all of your competitors. I know you don't want to think about them. I never want to think about things like that. But it'd be rather naive of us not to at least acknowledge the fact that competitors and even internal stakeholders are influencing that decision. So how do we take better control of this? How do we become less vulnerable between meetings? Because that's when I really believe that we're most vulnerable as sales professionals. Those times when we're not on a call with them or we're not on a WebEx with them, not in a meeting. It's that dead time between meetings. The way that we do it is by using repetition. Now, the key is to use repetition in a way that it's not repetitious. Because right away, when I said repetition, you might be thinking, okay, that means saying the same thing over and over and over again and basically annoying the hell out of someone. Well, that certainly could be one way to approach repetition. We're going to go about it a little bit differently. So there are three steps that I believe you should be using if you want to leverage repetition. And we're going to go through them quickly, but we're going to spend a lot of time on step number two. So let me give you what these are. I'm going to do the big reveal right now, the three steps. Number one, you have to determine, obviously, you can feel free to say duh to this, what's the message and or selling point that you want to drive home? So let me say that again. You want to determine what the message is going to be and or selling point that you absolutely want to drive home. Now, there are a few questions that you can answer that will help you determine what that's going to look like. Question number one, what did the prospect flag as important? Now, they might have flagged something directly and said, we want this. Or you asked them a question and they made it abundantly clear, this is what we're looking for. This is what we need. This is what's keeping us up at night. These are the challenges. These are the opportunities. So that's rather direct. But there might be some things that happen indirectly. Like what? Well, this is a reason why I enjoy face-to-face meetings. How many times have we been in a meeting and we touch on something and something wasn't said, but their whole level of intensity changed? Maybe all of a sudden you could hear a pin drop in the room. Perhaps it was a subtle look that two of the stakeholders in that meeting shot each other. So that could be indirect things that could have happened. So I want you to think about those. So number one, what did the prospect flag as important, either directly or indirectly? And what this one is super important, folks. What's something that should be important, but they just didn't know to express or ask? So let's say that one again, and I'll elaborate. What's something that should be important, but they just didn't know to ask? I really believe that there are some buyers, not all of them, some decision makers, certainly not all of them, that just don't know how to buy properly. Some of them, they're just looking for price. Some of them, they were told to ask for some kind of requirement that really isn't important. Some of them will, when they're putting together, especially an RFP, they will enlist the services of a consultant that has them put all kinds of requirements in there that might not be important. And I will also tell you that it's the old saying, we don't know what we don't know. So let me give you a few examples. Many times, and I'll give you a seasonal example because it really wasn't that long ago. I know it's February now that I'm recording this, but at the end of the year, one of the things when people come to me to talk to me about possibly coaching them, they'll say, Paul, one of the challenges I'm having right now is getting more sales in before year end. Or they tell me, Paul, one of the things we're hearing a lot of and we could use some help with it is call me back after the holidays. Now, that's an important question. Don't get me wrong. I'm not here to make fun of the questions that people have asked me. What I am here to know is that, yes, we can certainly address that, but there's a question that most people don't know to ask me. And it's, how could I be in a position this time next year where I don't have to repeat history? What can I do on the front end so that I have enough momentum coming into the holidays that I'm not panicking like this? So there's some things like that. Also, there are other situations where I talk to people and they say, Paul, I'm getting all these objections and we've met several times and now they're saying that we're not able to provide this and that's a concern for them and it's a money thing. Well, sometimes it's things that did or didn't happen earlier in the sales process, but they just don't know to talk about those things with me. And when it comes to buying things, that's not their full-time job, that one particular thing. Well, in some companies it is. But the average decision maker, this is part of their responsibility. They're doing other more important things, but they're involved in the decision as well. So they don't know what they don't know. Let me give you another example, and then we'll start getting into what we're going to do here and the rest of the steps. Many times when people want to hire me, and they want to hire a keynote speaker, for example. That's one of the services that I offer. They really don't know how to go about it. There are some common sense things that they ask me, but they really don't know the other things that they should be looking for. Because if you really think about it, there are certain things that people buy. And one of them is sales training and coaching. And when it comes to bringing on a keynote speaker, I would say there are many people listening to this who are in the printing industry. You know that you have lots of competitors. I have lots of competitors, but there are certain industries where you have tons of competitors. So they just don't know how to really look at what makes a company different. So what do? They default to price, and we want to avoid that. I mean, unless you know definitively that you have the lowest price and you guys just sell on price, that's the only value proposition that you could possibly come up with. And I can't imagine there's really anybody listening to this that's going to sell that way. There has to be other things to differentiate. So what we want to do is drive those points home. So again, that second question is, what's something that should be important to them, but they just didn't know to ask? Now, step number two. Step number one was, what's the message / selling point that you want to drive home? And I gave you a few questions to help you figure that out. Step number two is, you want to then have flag your theme and then vary the theme so you don't sound repetitious. And there are numerous ways for you to vary the theme. And one way is that you take the actual message and you change it up and you say it differently. You communicate it differently. So there's the message and there's the vehicle. The vehicle, I want you to think of a vehicle that you drive. Well, what kind of a vehicle are we going to use to transport that message? Is the vehicle going to be an email? Is it going to be a face-to-face meeting? Is it going to be something through LinkedIn? Is it going to be something with content? I can go on and on and on. In fact, I am going to go on and on and on in a minute because I'm going to give you several examples of how we can vary the theme both in message and with the vehicle that we use. Step number three is then you're going to map your communication. And the way that we're going to map the communication is we're going to think three touches or attempts, whatever you want to call them, into the future. So you're going to think about, okay, well, attempt number one or touch number one, whatever you want to call it, is going to be, I'm going to do this call to them, follow up, and I'm going to reiterate something that I know is important to them and how we might handle it. Then I'm going to wait X amount of time. You always want to have that in there in your communication map. I will wait 48 hours, 1 week, 2 weeks, whatever it is. Then comes attempt number two or touch number two. For that one, I'm going to send along this document that we use called a project map, and it's going to show different things that we're going to do by different dates to keep everybody focused on moving the deal forward, and so on and so forth. So that's what you're going to do. I'm going to give you the three steps again, and then we're going to come back onto step number two right now, and I will show you several examples to just get you thinking. Step number one, what's the message / selling point that you want to drive home? There'll be two questions that you ask to get you focused. What did the prospect flag as important, either directly or indirectly? Question number two, what's something that should be important, but maybe they just didn't know to ask? Step number two, we're going to then flag a theme. And we're going to embrace variation several ways, which we'll talk about in a minute. And then step number three, we're going to map out our communication in threes. The way that we do it is we just flag, what's that first attempt going to look like? And when are you going to do it? What's the message? What's the vehicle that you're going to use to deliver that message? How long will you wait until attempt number two or touch number two? And what's that going to look like? What's that message going to look like? How are you going to vary that so it doesn't look like you just keep saying the same damn thing over and over and over again? What's the vehicle that's going to deliver that? You're going to do it through LinkedIn? You're going to do something creative? You're going to maybe drop something off? FedEx something? So let's talk a little bit about how the heck do we do this? How the heck do we do this theme and variation thing? Well, first of all, I just want to tell you, just for the heck of it, where I was given the idea of this theme and variation thing. I've been a musician forever. So long that I always mix up how long it's been. For me, it's been since 1981 is when I picked up and started the guitar and started really playing it seriously. Picked up bass a little bit afterwards. Picked up keyboards 2 years later when I was studying music theory in high school and in college. So I've been playing a long time, and I'm far from awesome at it, because if I was, I wouldn't be doing podcasts talking about sales right now. I would be telling you about my world tour with some great kick-ass metal band. And also, surprisingly enough, there doesn't seem to... I'm so shocked by this. You guys, this is going to shock you guys too. You're going to be as equally appalled as I am. But did you guys know that there's really not a market for 53-year-old bald, overweight guys in these metal bands? Nobody told me this, so I'm a little bit stunned about it. So how the heck do we vary the theme, and where did I get it from? I got it from music theory and improvisation, where we introduce a theme, and it might be a melody in this case. And then what you do is you keep altering it a little bit. And you guys who aren't musicians, you've been exposed to this your whole life. You'll see it many times in movies, or and I'm not going to hum it for you, if you're a fan, like immediately I thought of The Larry David Show, Curb Your Enthusiasm. And many times they have this different theme that they play when he doesn't believe somebody. He's like staring into their eyes to see if they're full of crap or whatever. But sometimes before that scene happens, when he's starting to doubt what they're saying, you'll hear a variation of the theme. Not necessarily the exact theme, but a variation, like a few notes from that theme. That's what we're doing here. That was my motivation. That's what inspired this whole idea of theme and variation. So how do we do it? One way that we can do it is we can send a recap to our prospects. Now, you might be thinking of a recap in the context of business etiquette. It's what you do. It shows that you were listening. All those things are true. But there's also other reasons why we send a recap. I won't get into all of them here. There's even psychological reasons why we do it, which I won't get into here. But if I want to reinforce something that was important to them, and just a little potato chip to whet their appetite of how I might be able to handle it, just to make them hungry for more, I can send a recap. Quick little side note that I learned to do years ago, and it works very, very well. It's a form of a recap. It's something that you can even put into your proposals, and you can talk when you're going over the different points of a proposal. We call it concerns and solutions. The concerns are the concerns that they express to you. The solutions, again, in the form of a potato chip, something to whet their appetite, is how you could address those things specifically. If you're in a situation where somebody didn't express concerns to you, I want you to think like a true consultant. Don't we say that all the time? Sales, we have to be better consultants. Be a true consultant. It's one of those things we beat the hell out of in sales, like that, and you have to add value. So in this case, one of the things you could do if you wanted to be a true consultant, one of the things a true consultant does is they find things that weren't necessarily expressed to them. So instead of concerns and solutions, you can call that sheet of paper or this tactic findings and solutions. The other thing that you can do is have some follow-up questions to guide their thinking and have them perhaps discover the aha instead of being force-fed the aha. You could also create follow-up talking points that underscore those areas that we talked about: the message, the selling point, the challenges, the opportunities, the pain points, the things keeping them up at night. And how cool would it be if we had talking points to kind of, again, whet their appetite, give them a potato chip of how we might be able to help? Here's one that I talk about a lot, and I think there's a lot of room here for the sales profession to start using it more: the use of bios. Using your bio. Now, unless you're at sales or an industry for like a month or whatever, and some of you are, I'm not making fun of you. There was a point where I remember years ago when I went into the printing industry, I was just like kind of like a baby in that industry. Now, oh my gosh, man, I'm like a freaking grandfather in that industry. And the same thing with a lot of my software clients. I remember there was a time where I had no experience. Now, I have about 10 years of experience. I remember there was a time when I didn't have much experience training millennials. Now I have a ton of experience. I did work at MTV. I did work over at Dale Carnegie. I was hired actually to head up a program that was going to train 200 millennials back in my last corporate job that I had before I hung out the Castain Training Systems shingle. But the bio is important because if you have expertise, it's a nice way of showing people, hey, look, here's my expertise without talking about it. It's actually taking something that's intangible. Well, what's intangible? Your expertise. What the hell does that look like? And it makes it tangible by giving them a bio and they're like, wow, this person has experience. They have expertise. So when would I offer a bio? There's at least two spots that I train my clients to offer a bio. One is when you set up an appointment to go see someone, or to it could be if you're in an inside sales model, you set up a discovery call or a demo. What you're going to do is allow enough time for you to be able to FedEx a pre-appointment kit. Now, there's several things that you're going to need to put into that pre-appointment kit, and I'm not going to give everything away because it's actually something that I teach in two of the courses that we offer. But I will tell you that one of the things should be your bio. Why? Because it's important that people know that they have somebody coming to see them that knows what the hell they're talking about. And also, it allows them to sort of get to know you before you even get there. What's the other place where I use a bio? The other place, by the way, nobody does that first step. I'm going to tell you hands down, nobody ever sends a pre-appointment kit. It's a nice way for you to stand out. The other place where people use the bio, or they should be using the bio, that I advise them to use the bio, is in the proposal. Why? Because I believe that people buy us first, then the company and the widget. And it doesn't, we could change that order a little bit, but usually the first step is us. They need to buy us. And we're very quick in the sales profession to say, well, you get me, and the difference is me. Okay, those are great words. And please understand that you're not the only one spewing that line. There's a lot of people saying it. But how do you prove that? The way that you prove it is by showing them your expertise. And you could do that with your bio. One little added tip, when you send a bio to people, make sure you slap your picture on there because people buy from human beings. And it will create that visual for them. And I was just going to say something sarcastic. In fact, I will. Unless you're god-awful ugly, then I wouldn't do it. But what I always tell people, if I put my ugly mug on my bio, you certainly can. So the other thing you can do, and this has to do a little bit with the bio, is you could send a LinkedIn invitation. If you're trying to reinforce your expertise and experience, and you do the thing with the bio, we want to have some repetition in here. Well, I gave you two spots for the bio. This is a third one that's rather indirect, a LinkedIn invite. Why? Because LinkedIn is basically your online resume. It's your bio. So that could be very, very important. But also, if they are somewhat active, they don't have to be on there 24/7. And if you're posting things to underscore your expertise on LinkedIn, like content, perhaps a video of you talking about some things that are important to consider when buying your widget, or you're offering a helpful hint. And it doesn't have to be just through video. It could be just in your status update. Here are three things you need to consider. Well, if they're connected with you and they see that, it underscores that whole idea that you have experience. The other thing you could do, and I just mentioned it, is putting out some content. You don't have to be a full-blown Madison Avenue copywriter or an accomplished author to put out content. One little cheat sheet that I always like to share with everyone that I've proudly ripped off from the advertising industry. This has been around forever. And when I first read this, I really wish that I had all the facts straight so I could tell you who it was. But this was shared. I think this was shared originally. Not originally. This was shared by Frank Kern. And I've spoken a lot about Frank Kern on this podcast. But Frank Kern ripped it off from some famous copywriter who used this formula that I'm going to give you to, I think they moved. It was a few billion dollars in products and services. And it was back in like the early 60s. So even now, that was an impressive number to move like a few billion dollars in products and services. But imagine now going back in time and the value of a dollar to the early 1960s or whatever it was. And the formula is simply this: what every blank should know about blank. What every blank should know about blank. So a few examples. If I'm in the printing industry, what every chief marketing officer should know about stretching your marketing budget. What every, I don't know, what every marketer should know about hiring a printer. How about my industry? Coaching. We'll take the coaching part of it. What every sales rep should know about hiring a sales coach. You guys get the idea. That guides what that content is going to look like. And it doesn't have to be War and Peace. It doesn't have to be some lengthy thing. In fact, the briefer, the better. It could be what we call snackable content, something people can consume very, very quickly. But it underscores the fact that you know what you're doing. And it puts you into the role of teacher and advisor instead of someone now who is lower on the totem pole trying to beg and plead for consideration. You want the role of advisor. Hey, isn't that another thing? Do you have to become a trusted advisor when you're not offering value and being a true consultant? The way that you do this, the way that you ascend to that level, is by informing people and teaching them. And you could be teaching them about how to buy your product or service properly. Not every widget in your industry is created equal, although it may appear that way. And they might think that, well, the way then you differentiate is by finding the cheapest price. Is that the best way to buy your widget? I'm guessing it isn't. So you have to teach them in bulleted form things, again, that are very snackable type of content. Things that if they look at, if you were to send them a PDF, that they could at a glance get what you're talking about and not be intimidated by it. If you send me something that is just way, way too lengthy, my brain is going to say to me, Kesting, you don't have the time for this. Check it out later. It looks good. Looks like a lot of care was put into this, but you don't have the time for this right now. You're between meetings. So what happens? You put it to the side and you never get to it and you forget about it. So that's one of the things that you could do with content. You can also, this is one of my favorite things, use different forms of evidence. We use evidence to prove something that we're saying and to also, hopefully proactively, eliminate or at least reduce the probability of skepticism and doubt and ultimately objections. That's why we use evidence. So that should be part of your theme and variation. So how do we do that? There are different forms of evidence. One of the things you could be doing is samples. And when I say samples, it's not just samples of your product. It could be samples that illustrate an internal system that you have to prevent a headache. For example, the guy I worked for years ago was ranked second worldwide. He was the sales manager on the team that I worked for. And I got to shadow him for a few days. And he used to carry a carry-on into all of his appointments. And in there, he called it his props. And if he was talking to you about our quality control, he didn't just talk to you about it. He pulled out several of the internal forms that we use to ensure that you don't have to babysit us if we work for you. If he was talking about the fact that we were the most highly insured in our industry, he didn't just talk to you about it. He pulled out a form of evidence that we call a sample of the certificate of insurance showing that we had $30 million, which was, I think the next nearest one to us was maybe $10 million. He showed you a sample of it, and certainly samples of your work. Now, again, we're going to go a tiny bit off topic, but we're really on topic. One little helpful hint: whenever you show a sample of your work, understand you have to know that you're not the only one that shows samples of your work, especially if you're in an industry like printing that loves to show samples of their work. But the way that you differentiate with a sample is not only to have a kick-ass sample, but to tell the war story that goes along with it. And if you are hopefully on the side of the road or in your office, please write that down. Another form of evidence would be the use of stories. That is another thing that you can do. So let's talk about a few other forms of evidence. You could use a before and after photo. You can, testimonials are huge. Little tip for you when it comes to testimonials. Let's go back to that thing with, actually two tips. You're going to get two tips here for the price of one with testimonials. The first thing is most sales reps make a mistake when it comes to their testimonials. They have testimonials that talk solely about the company and the result. Now, those are good things. Don't get me wrong. And they work. But if you can get, you should definitely have things that talk about the company and the solution and the result that they were able to achieve as a result of that widget. But it should also mention you specifically. So make sure, number one, that the testimonials not only talk about results and the widget and the solution, make sure that it mentions you by name. And the other little tip when it comes to testimonials, it's marrying in something else that we talked about before. When we talked about the bio, what you want to do, if you have one or two or three tops testimonials, you want to allow space at the bottom of your bio to put those testimonials there where they're calling you by name. Why? Because it's a 1-2 lethal knockout punch. Punch number one is showing them through your bio that you have the expertise. Punch number two, and the knockout punch here, is when we have the testimonials, because the testimonials basically answer the question, who says so besides yourself? So those are some form of evidence that you can use there. Case studies. But those are some things that you want to think about to drive the point home. Now, let me just give you an example or two of how different people have used theme and variation to drive a point home. I'm going to point back to the printing industry again. There was this printer that I worked with that wanted to really drive home the fact that they are awesome when it comes to deadlines. And for those of you who are familiar or perhaps in the printing industry, I refer to it as the deadline business because you're dealing with some serious deadlines. So what this printer did to reinforce this thing that they're, this message that they're awesome when it comes to deadlines, one of the things that they did was they used a greeting card that I had actually used in my printing business that I had owned many, many years ago. So I figured nobody would recognize that they got it from me or whatever. It wasn't even that good that people would recognize. I think Castain wrote that because I'm really not that good. And it was a riddle. And on the cover of the greeting card, it says, what has 8 letters, 2 syllables, and dozens of headaches? What has 8 letters, 2 syllables, dozens of headaches? You open it up and it says, a deadline. Call us next time you have one. And then I encourage them to write a little handwritten note reinforcing it. So we can reinforce things with creativity. And you remember we said changing the vehicle. This is going through snail mail now. But also, I encourage them the next time somebody says to them, oh my gosh, you saved my ass with this deadline. You came through it. You're a superhero. You're great. You saved the day. Just get dramatic. Please, just do me a favor right now. Grab your phone and just like text message me that or email me what you just said, because if you do that and you allow me to use that, I can help other people just like you. I can get more awesome clients, cool clients just like you. Would you do that for me? I'll wait right now while you do it. And that's, by the way, how you get testimonials very, very quickly. In the moment when somebody tells you that you kicked ass for them, you stop them in that moment and say, right now, could you please just text that to me or email that to me? So that I can use that. That would make my day if you could do that. That's, you're saying thank you? That is the ultimate way that you can thank me for doing that. So what they do then is, or what they did in this case, is they had testimonials that they used talking about their ability to handle deadlines. So that's something that we can do. Also, I had said to them, put out content to the chief marketing officers and the people on the marketing team, educating them on, first of all, when to bring the printer in on a project, because sometimes the wrong time to bring them in is at the very end. If they're there involved earlier, there's some time-saving and cost-saving measures that a good printer could offer to them. But also, put out another piece, what to do if you find yourself in a deadline or in a bind. What are some questions that you should ask? What are some things that you should do? What should you be prepared to do and or even pay? Because there's rush charges and other things that could be incurred. So those are some ways that they were able to reinforce. Let me give you another example. I have other companies that want to reinforce the fact that they are local, that they're right there in the neighborhood, which to me, depending on what you sell, can be a really good selling point thanks to the people at American Express and Small Business Saturday and all these small business initiatives. So how could you reinforce that? Well, one of the things that you could do is just add the following phrase when you're leaving a voicemail or in an email or in a conversation with them. The phrase could be, and we're right here in town, or right here in Melville, or we're 5 minutes away and can respond quickly. Change that whole theme and variation. The theme is the same, we're local. But we're changing up how we say it, and even we could change up the vehicle. You could also, speaking of changing up the vehicle, if you want to reinforce that you're a local supplier, you could host local events. I wish I knew the name of this company. There was this company, and I know that they're not the only one doing this. You see this a lot in the software industry. A lot of the technology companies out in California are doing this a lot. And I think it could work wherever you are. They'll host sometimes a local game night at their place where they'll put out refreshments. They'll have all kinds of board games. And people from the local community will come in and hang out. It's a great little way to also network and have some fun. And it's different. Because I don't think if you invited somebody to that, they'd say, hey, that's really cool. Would you put that invite over there on that table with the other 50 invites to a game night that I received to somebody here from somebody here in town? It's a nice way to stand out and be different. You could also host local lunch and learns and local networking events. Again, it will drive the point home. So there are also things about your character that you should use repetition to drive home. One of the things that I teach people to do is don't just say that you're going to do something. Use the following two phrases. Promise and like I promised I would. Promise or I promise to and then like I promised I would. Nancy, I promise to get you that information on my coaching program by Tuesday. Tuesday rolls around, or better yet, maybe it's even Monday because I want to be ahead of it and show that I'm a person who respects a deadline to the point where I'm going to get it to you a little early. I'm going to say something along the lines of, Nancy, here's that information as promised, or like I promised I would. I'll vary that throughout the relationship because a lot of sales to me has to do with things that happen subconsciously. And it's a feeling. I want you to think about the best relationships that you have. Some of the best relationships you have, you can't possibly put it into words. It's more of a feeling in your heart. It's more of a feeling that you have. And I really believe it's the same way here. So kind of you're hitting the subconscious with that. So the other thing that you can do, as far as having people understand things about you, the example I just gave before was more about your character. Here's one that nobody ever talks about, and then we're going to wrap up. There's a lot of people out there saying, hey, you should be putting out content. I said that before, didn't I? Put out content. And for like the last 10 years, you have all these thought leaders saying how important it is for you to be embracing thought leadership on LinkedIn and blogging, and you're supposed to be giving, 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 give up front without a scorecard, give unconditionally. And for the most part, nobody's going to say that that's BS. Most people are going to buy into that. It sounds good. It sounds warm and fuzzy. We know, because it's been around for over 10 years now, especially the content that we're putting out on the social networks, it's been over 10 years. We know that it works. But the thing of it is, if you're constantly giving, 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 my argument is this: is it possible that we're conditioning people to take, take, take? Is it possible that people will be so busy, and no offense, forgive me, this is going to sound like a slap in the face, I certainly don't mean it, but is it possible that you're just going to have a bunch of people listen to your podcast and never buy a damn thing from you? Is it possible you're going to have a bunch of people reading your blog or those things you're putting out on LinkedIn? You see some of these people putting out things on LinkedIn and they're the cool kids. They have a million comments on there. Not really a million, but they have 50 comments, 100, several hundred comments or whatever. That doesn't mean that people are going to buy from them. And the sentiment seems to be that if you're giving and you're doing all these great things, that people will naturally then buy from you. And I disagree with that. I think some people will. I think that it's not because they're nasty, and that's not when it comes to not buying from you. I just don't think that they're aware that they can buy from you. I think they just know that you're that person that puts out that cool sales playbook podcast, or you're that cool person with that blog, and they love all the free tips. They love all those things that you're putting out on LinkedIn or how you're eager to help. Doesn't mean that they're going to buy from you. So that's where we have to use repetition. So the repetition that I use there, and I want you to think about this. If you've been following me for a while, you know that I do this. I like a by the way approach. I like to give something and then at the end of the comment, do a by the way. Hey, if you found value in this, we have this program where we're going to be teaching you about it. If you enjoyed this, come check out our so-and-so program. And you could do the same thing. Now, you don't have to do it every time like I'm doing it. But I'm here to tell you, if you think that you're going to just put things out and people are going to know, oh, I can buy from this person, they don't know. And as much as I'm giving you examples of what's happened to me, I can tell you I've also been the one that I was doing this to other people where I was taking their information, taking their kindness, but I just never thought of them that way. It's almost like getting friend-zoned. They're just not thinking of you as anything more than a friend because you've never put that out there through repetition that they can have a relationship with you that is beyond one of quote-unquote friendship. So I want you to think about that, and I'm going to leave you with a thought, and this is something that I've been saying for a long time. Everything that you say and do consistently and repeatedly over time becomes associated with you. Repetition, therefore, is the mother of brand. Let's say it again. Everything you say and do consistently and repeatedly over time becomes associated with you. Repetition, therefore, is the mother of brand. Now, here I'm going to practice what I preached. I said I use a by the way approach. And when we do a by the way approach, you don't necessarily say by the way. Imply a by the way. So here is an implied by the way. If you found value in today's episode, would you please check out our downloadable sales program by visiting yoursalesplaybook.com/rockstar. With that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them.